Your brand deserves better than one-size-fits-all branded clothing. Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your team will want to wear, backed by above-and-beyond expertise. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
Didn't even get a chance to talk about the Manchester derby, which I know you were very keen to. What's your ideal outcome of that game, by the way?
Manchester United win, the no threat to Liverpool and Manchester City are. It's as simple as that.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
We have a very special chat with Patrice Evra. His new book, I Love This Game, My Autobiography, is out now, and he wrote it alongside Andy Mitten. Both in the book and in this interview, he details some of his experience of sexual abuse as a child, which some of you might find distressing. He also explains how he came to speak about that abuse in his book for the first time, and lots more besides.
OTB AM.
All right, Patrice Evra, I Love This Game. The autobiography has just been released this week. Delighted to say that the man himself, Patrice Evra, joins us on the line. Hi, Patrice.
Hey, guys.
You can hear me there okay?
Yeah, you very well.
What part of the world are you in?
I'm in Manchester.
Favourite city in the world?
Yes, because that's the city where I feel home.
So it's you love to get back. I presume you've still loads of friends and it's quite a social occasion for you.
Oh yes, I think I feel like a Mancunian. So it's just like when I come back in the city, the energy, the love, it's just amazing. And you know, it's a lot of memory. Like I say, I feel home. I live in Dubai. I go to different beautiful places, but Manchester is just like special.
The book I've just finished in the last few days, and it's a brilliant piece. And we'll get into it. You worked with Andy Mitten on it. Had you always in mind, Patrice, that you'd write a book, or was this something that just came your way?
Actually, he came away. He's Andy Mitten, the writer. It was after the game. I was still playing for Juventus, and one guy's wait after the game, and it was raining, and he said, can I have a chat with you? You know, he said, yeah, I'm a friend of Ryan Giggs and Gary Neville. And, you know, I'm writing for the United column and all that. Nice to meet you. And he gave me his card and he said, you know, if you want to do anything, if you want to do a book, you just let me know and we're going to talk about it. Then I just call him one day. He visit me. He come to Juventus to visit me and we had a chat and we start. And it was like, tell me about your life. And we start recording and yeah, we end up doing that book.
Yeah, it's incredibly honest for all that. And if we can get straight into it, Patrice, if you don't mind, the opening pages are a tough read and I presume were very tough to write for you.
Yeah, I think it was important for me to say it because I lived for so many years with that weight on my chest, that shame, that feeling like a coward to not like speak out. It was really important for me to do it, but not for myself, for the kids outside, you know, being in my place, you know, someone has to step out. And because I already is receiving so many support, so many messages, and even some people, they've been abused like the same way. And, you know, this was important because I wanted to do the most honest book I can. And to be fair, I finished the book 1 year ago and it's just like 3 months ago when I decided to put it in because I meet the woman of my life and emotionally I'm more open than I used to be. So I'm getting rid to all that toxic masculinity and, you know, being open. And like I grew up crying was a sign of weakness, but now I know crying is a strain. And I am a human being. I have to show my emotion, but I have to block all my emotion for so many years when this trauma happened to myself. But it's not an excuse. And I wanted also to show to the young generation, you know, it's no excuse. Already born as a colored person in this world is a disadvantage. Growing in the street is about surviving and being abused is a trauma. But, you know, no excuse. I'm happy now. I'm content. I'm complete. And that's what I want the next generation when they read that book. You know, football is a long journey. And I'm explaining this. That's why I couldn't start that book without telling, you know, that strong story.
Yeah. And it is a very strong story. It's a very honest story. And it is a hard story, as I said, to read. Can you take us back, Patrice? You're 13 years of age. You moved to a school away from your home area of Les Ulis. And it's a football, a school with a bit more of a football ethos, but it's a bit far from home, and that's where the trouble begins for you.
Yeah, that's the reason why, you know, because I was every time taking a train, and at 5 in the morning, 2 hours to get to my school. I had even school on the Saturday when every of my friends have a weekend off, but it was just a school when, it's not an academy school, but it's just a school when you go to school and after you can play football with some coach. So back and forth, it was start to be like really like heavy, and I was losing my my school bag on the train. I was sleeping on the train, not getting out of the right station. So it was a nightmare that a teacher, he said, you know, I'm living inside the school. Instead of you going back and forth to your house, you should stay in my house. So at the beginning, it was like a dream. He was cooking for me. I had a Nintendo. I couldn't play video game. So it was like perfect. And but the nightmare was like every night when I was in my bedroom and, you know, it was trying to come and abuse me and touching himself. I had even to tie my pyjama with some laces shoes. Mm. So it was a fight, a constant fight for 10, 15 minutes. Then in one point he succeeded, you know, and he put his penis, my penis on his mouth, in his mouth. So it was weird because even me, I didn't have any sexual relation before that. So I didn't know what was happening. I know when I was fighting, I didn't want it, like no one to touch me. But yeah, when he did this and, you know, he was next to the bedroom, and I said to my mom, I don't want to stay to that person anymore, to that home. And she was like, why? And I said, just I don't want. But she knows something was wrong.
Yeah. You were very young, Patrice, and you weren't to understand obviously what was going on, and you internalized it, and in fact I think kept it to yourself until 3 months ago.
I mean, like, the first person I opened myself was Margot, the woman of my life, because she was like, Patrice, you know, you're such an happy person, you're such a caring person and positive, but do you care about yourself? I say, yes, I'm happy. And you know, she said, like, I don't know, it's something like wrong with you sometime, you know. And we watch a documentary on TV. It was about pedophile, and when I watched it, my face suddenly changed, and she was like, you okay? I said, yeah, I'm okay. So she was trying to get in, and I don't let people in like so easy, and it was like she was annoying me doing that. But after, I just burst in tears, and she was the first person I explained everything, because I trust her, because I feel safe next to her. Then, like I said, the big confrontation wasn't even when the book was released. It was more myself traveling to Paris and see my mom face to face and tell her that. It was a horrible day because she was devastated. Because imagine, I was 13 years old and now 40 years old, I'm telling what's happening. It was even sometimes she sent me some voice note and she still like she don't understand. And she was also like, Patrice, I don't think you should put it in your book because it's private. But I was like, Mom, it's not about me. I'm fine. It's about the other kids now. Mm. So to send a message out there. And if you have been in my situation, it's easy to say, like, go and speak out. But make sure you find someone you can trust. And trust me, it will help you a lot. So don't be afraid. You know, it's not being about being weak or being like, shame of yourself, like I've been, or feeling like a coward. It's just like to make sure, you know, those people, they stop doing those bad things to children. So I received so many support, so many messages already. And like I said, I don't do it for myself. I really do it for the kids out there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a conversation that we're very familiar with having in this country. Patrice, has a long and storied history, particularly in relation to religious groups in this country, and the impact not only on the victim but also on the families around that survivor can be huge. Obviously, in terms of, you mentioned in the book about the shame and the guilt, the impact is a ripple of impact, doesn't it? Even well beyond yourself.
No, but definitely it's. It's all the people around you, the family. Like, it built me, like, now I understand, like, so many things. Sometimes, you know, I see my friend dying or even member of my family, my brother, and I couldn't cry because, you know, you just stop all your emotion and you just like start to don't trust anyone. I didn't trust anyone in my life because of that. It is a massive damage for the family, especially even when my brother and sister, I told them they were all devastated and people feel guilty. And my mom said one thing, you know, because I keep saying sorry. She said, you should say sorry to no one else. You know, we are sorry to not be here and to understand something was wrong. So, yeah, it is a massive damage for even the people around you.
The police, I believe, called you years later. They were following up on other investigations about the same teacher. Did anything ever come of that? I know at that time you weren't in a position to respond to that at that time, but did anything ever come of those investigations into that teacher?
That's what my mom asked me. And like I say, you know, when you got those things, you want to bury them. You just don't want to hear, talk about it. You just, you know, don't want to know what's happening next. I'm sure like because my book come out now, those people from the police, they will maybe try to reach me or reach my team. I don't know to be fair. And my mom was like, if he's not dead, I'm going to kill you. But I was like, you see, mom, maybe it's the destiny. If I told you that 13 years ago, maybe you will end up in jail and I won't have the same education and, you know, not living with my mom. So I think everything come for a reason. And I don't know. Let's see. Maybe I'm going to be reached by the police and telling me why, you know, when you were 24, you didn't say it. And, you know, so we'll see.
Yeah, well, it's clear from the book and it's clear from talking to you that you're doing it for the reason of people that might be in the same situation and to try and get help for those who might be. So you're doing a very good thing and well done and well spoken out on it as well. Can I talk to you about some other aspects of it, Patrice? You word it as your addiction to Manchester United, the friends, the fans, the rivalries, the teammates, tough time for your family, I think, in Manchester at that time as well. And your respect for Alex Ferguson is a huge theme all the way through. Can you talk about your relationship with Alex Ferguson now for us?
Yeah, he's bigger than a manager. It's, even him, I told him the abuse before I released in the book. He's someone I really trust. He's someone when I signed, said, Patrice, you know, here you can be yourself. Like I always say, you know, the definition between my relationship with Ferg, I was always scared to disappoint him. So it's such a mutual respect. You know, I'm going to see him. We have lunch. I introduce him to Margot and my baby Lilas. And I'm going to see him actually Saturday. We talked last night. It was like, I'm going to sue you with my lawyers because you talk too good about me. So it's more than a manager, and that's why, you know, when he had his incident, I was like devastated. But when his son Jason sent me a message and say, Patrice, I just want to make sure like my dad will be okay, and I know you are one of the few people he was happy to giving any news, I was like, wow, feeling really privileged. But it's just our connection will never end, and it's getting better and better.
Yeah, like it's funny. I'm actually really interested. The reason I laughed when you said that he was saying to set his lawyers on you about the positive things. You also do get to see that Alex Ferguson is a 3D character and not without his flaws at times.
No, but I think Ferguson gave the edge right to many players, and some of them even cry. You could be scared of your dad, but Ferguson was something else. Yeah. I always think one day he's going to die of a heart attack, the way he's shouting and the fan and the face. And it's like I say, outside the pitch, it's just amazing. But when the game starts, you know, you need to bleed for United. And our relationship was so special. And I always say that story. We were winning against Tottenham 2-0. And I was playing an amazing game. So we came back after time. Everyone was like, oh, Patrice, you're on fire. And the boss, didn't speak for 3-5 minutes, and when he don't speak, he mean like someone is in trouble. And he look at me, he said, Patrice, are you okay? I said, yes, I'm okay. He said, are you tired? And when he say that, you know, I look around, I think it was a prank. I was like, no, I'm not. And I was smiling. He said, why you pass the ball back to Andrew Van der Sar? I said, because I didn't have any solution for her. It was like, if you do that again, you're gonna end up and watching the game next to me. This is one of the worst game you ever played since you played for United. So he destroyed me, and I don't like the injustice. So I stood up, and you know, we are talking face to face, and I was so angry. And the second half, we won like 4-0. The next day, because I'm someone I like also to talk and, you know, to understand what's happening. The next day, I knock his office. I said, boss, what's happened yesterday? He said, oh, son, you were the best player in the pitch. But, you know, because Cristiano Ronaldo was doing some trick, the other player, they were missing some chance. So, you know, when you play for United, you have to score one goal and the second and the third. So, and he said, get out of my office, French, I won't say the swearing. And at the end, I understand, you know, I said, this guy, he just like sent a message to the team, and he picked the best player on the pitch to make sure like the other player, they like, ooh, if he's killing me, imagine them. So it's just that kind of relationship, that trust. You know, I can do everything for him and he can do everything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that trust and that loyalty obviously was a factor. And he stood by you around the... Luis Suarez has been back in the headlines obviously during the week. He's been back at Liverpool this week and everybody's chatting about him again. And you go into big detail in the book about all that affair, the racist abuse obviously at that time, the hearing, the Liverpool reaction. The thing that I couldn't believe after all of that, and it really, you know, look, it was an interesting piece where you had said a couple of years later you actually voted for him for PFA Player of the Year.
Yeah, because I don't have any hate. I don't have any hate in my heart. And, you know, I judged the players, not the person. Never be the best person in the world. But like I said, I don't call Luis as a racist because I don't know him close enough to call him that way. But that day, yeah, he used to racist word. He tried to deny. He's been banned. And I was in shock when the Liverpool team, you know, they came out with the shirt and supporting because the ban was already done. So I was so delighted and surprised when Jamie Carragher in live TV and he apologized for what he did like 9 years ago, like wearing that shirt. And I received like some email from the owner of Liverpool saying, we're really sorry and whatever, you're more than welcome to come in Anfield and stuff like that. So, you know, I turned the page. I play against Luis Suarez in the final of Champions League when I was at Juventus, and I was talking with Neymar and he came and I shake his hand. So like I say, I'm someone I forgive.
There was a very funny story where yourself and your brother bumped into him and his family in Selfridges.
Yeah, but that's funny and not funny, because I think that day I could do something like really bad, wrong, the dark side coming again. Yes, we saw him at Selfridges. He was on his own first. My brother said, oh, Luis is over there. And as I start walking toward him and I see his little girl and his wife. So I was like, okay, don't do something stupid. You know, the family is there. But 100%, if his family wasn't there that day, something bad will happen.
You've mentioned it actually a couple of times about the dark side, Patrice, and the anger, and it is a common theme throughout the book. How hard was it for you? And by the sounds of things, it could be difficult at times. You know, you're not unique in that regard. Like, you know, a Rooney or a Costa, or Roy Keane, I suppose, would have been another one that was like that mongrel, that dog on the pitch that would really get stuck in. Hard to always leave that on the pitch, though.
It was hard, because that's why, like, the game, that's why people was like, Patrice, oh my God, this guy's, when it's the game, his face changes, a killer. And they're like, even people, they could understand my social media right now, seeing me smiling and this, because that's the whole adrenaline, you know. That's why when I wake up in the morning, the first things I do is not having a breakfast, is going in the gym, doing my stuff, my exercise, because I've got that, you know, that fire inside. And that's the kind of fire I had all my life, because it helped me to survive. I can't do nothing about it. I grew up in the street, you know, so fighting was something like normal. Something is like, you know, it's all about surviving. So, yeah, a few days, it wasn't easy. Like, I had, like, a lot of issue when, you know, I fight with the Grandman staff of Chelsea, in Monaco also with a fan, Marseille, you know. So sometimes, you know, we are human beings. I love when people say, oh, they are a footballer player, they shouldn't do that, but I am a human being. I've got emotion, I've got real feeling. So when you hurt me, you know, my defense, you know, was like to, you know, to answer back, but with my fist. But that's why now I know fist is not a solution, but that's the way I am. And I improve a lot. When my woman, she's next to me, you know, I feel peace, I feel safe. But of course, everyone have that fire inside.
Mm. 18th of November 2009, Patrice, I don't know if that's a date that rings a huge amount of bells for you. When I tell you the location, you'll probably get a bit clearer with the Stade de France, France versus Ireland. Obviously, the game has become infamous at this point. Where were you on the pitch when William Gallas scores that goal?
No, I was behind. I think I wasn't too far. And I remember that game well because... What a game. We won the first leg in Ireland 1-0, and the second leg, I think we didn't play in France, we played in Ireland because the Irish fan was just amazing. We had a worse first half. We were really losing 1-0. They battered us. And halftime, you know, Dominic was speaking like, come on, guys, it's going to be okay. And I remember I stood up, I said, guys, we are shitting ourselves. We're not going to the World Cup. They are like destroying us. So it was like a wake-up call. I have a big talk at the halftime. Then we came in, and that goal, you know, that goal came. And the way the French people, they destroyed Thierry Henry, I was really, really upset because, you know, some people, they like, it's funny, they were like, oh, he should have go and say, you know, I did the handball, so fair enough. But I think even his own teammate, and even his country, they will like maybe bring the guillotine back for Thierry Henry. So that game, I remember I had a little silly comment, like a joke when I come back in Manchester. They were like, oh, we should like replay the game. And I was like, I think we should replay the game in a PlayStation and stuff like that. Mm. But like now the Irish people, like I have so much high respect for them. And I even went in Dublin and I did the river dance. So to tell you, I'm learning that culture, many things, and I've been to that countryside when it's the massive mountain and it's the giant sleeping. And I was even like to John O'Shea, like, but you know, I don't know, your country is so like so beautiful, so alive, such a like a positive energy. So yes, that episode was not nice, but not for us. It was not nice for the Irish people and for Thierry Henry.
Yeah.
And I think it was even worse. First for Thierry Henry.
Yeah, there was definitely a few people this side of the water, Patrice, who wanted his head in a guillotine. What was the reaction when you guys were on the pitch afterwards? There was obviously a lot of the Irish players were over to the official and to the referee. What were your as players on the pitch at that time? What was your reaction?
No, my reaction was we didn't see it. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know. I knew after the game when I see the replay. And we saw like the handball, but during the game, like you don't, I don't know which Irish player said it was an handball because I don't have any like image in my head. And I didn't ask Thierry Henry if he did a handball like during the game because I was more focused to make sure to don't lose and qualify for the World Cup. So me, I wasn't aware of that just after the game.
And so when you say after the game, was that you guys were still in the dressing room and you were still together at that stage?
Yeah, we were still together. That's when we see the image because, you know, you have a TV in the dressing room and that's why we saw that. But, you know, it was a silence. We didn't laugh about it. Like even the manager, it's not like we celebrate. I remember it was so weird because, you know, when you have the feeling like you just didn't qualify for the World Cup because it was like, you know, what's going on?
Yeah. So just in terms of the reaction on the pitch, in the dressing room afterwards, after all that then, well, did it become a point of conversation or was it just like, look, it happened,
no,
it's done?
Taboo. It was like silence. Like I say, it wasn't any celebration. It wasn't any happy. It was just like weird. It was like just flat. You know, because we saw what's happened and we're like, you know, sometimes you like to win in the maybe in a better way. But at the end, like, that's why I say it's too easy for people to say like, oh, I wish we were doing this. I'm not sure like an Irish player, if he did that, he will say like, okay, hands up, because his country will destroy him. Like some people will say like, yes, But some people will say, like, you know, the football world is a dirty world. It's not like clean. Like some people, they will cheat to win a game. Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't want, like, people, they like to come with the best idea. Oh, if it was me, it wasn't you. I wasn't Thierry Henry. So I would never say what I was going to do because it didn't happen to me.
One last one on that, just before we wrap. Did you speak to John O'Shea about it? How did that conversation go?
I remember when he went to Manchester, Jay-Z was still like upset. And no, we didn't talk about it. You know, he just says, you just lucky bastard. That's what he was saying. But we never talk about it. And I feel like Yelan, every time when we play against them, even in the Euros, where it was such a magnificent game, you can feel that the country still have that one now. How they play against France, because it's like, you know, they didn't go to the World Cup. But to be fair, I think they didn't do us a favor to qualify for that World Cup because we saw what's happening in 2010. So it was more like a curse or a karma. I don't know.
Yeah, we enjoyed it, Patrice. Can I say that?
Well, no, but I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And it's not like, you know, I will be like, oh my God, I will, the same place, I will celebrate it. So, you know, everything happened for a reason in life. And maybe, you know, that moment, maybe France was not supposed to go to the World Cup, but we're going to keep saying the if, but it happened, it's history. We can talk about it openly and honestly. But of course, like, if I'm an Irish and I see your team like striking for the World Cup, I will like, oh, you deserve it. Mm.
The book is a brilliant read. There's loads of detail about that World Cup and future World Cups as well, and lots of other details. We could talk to you for a couple of hours, Patrice, but I know you're under pressure there to get out of here. You've been really good with telling your story. Can't recommend the book enough. Thanks a million for chatting to us, and catch up with you again soon.
You're more than welcome. Take care.
Thank you. Yeah, the book is I Love This Game. It's Patrice Evra in the company of Andy Mitten, and it's really worth your while, as I said earlier, particularly if you're a Manchester United fan.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.